how new nurses make job decisions, the CDC looks at the safety of health clinics, and a retired nurse looks back. Plus, a look at club drugs. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to The Nursing Show, episode 13. I'm Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to welcome all of you to this week's program. We're going to be looking at some news as usual, as well as an in-depth look at club drugs, and also a link to a great site run by the NIH that is a great resource for information on all kinds of club drugs and drug abuse issues. So if that's something you're interested in, you want to make sure you stay tuned for a look at club drugs. I want to thank everybody for your comments that you sent in. Especially, I'd like to thank listener Tim, who is a practical nurse in New South Wales, Australia. I say practical nurse because that is a term I think that would apply here in the United States. However, the actual term he used was enrolled nurse, and he says he'll be updating his certification here soon, and he has been working in a burn unit there in Australia and has offered to be interviewed here. So we're going to be talking to him at a future episode, and I just want to thank him for checking in. If you are interested in sharing some of your experiences in whatever area of nursing that you've chosen to work in, you can get in touch with me here at comments@nursingshow.com. Go ahead and leave me an email, and I will be happy to get back in touch with you and set up a phone interview, and we can share some of your experiences and some of your outlook on a chosen area of nursing with the rest of the listeners here at The Nursing Show. And I think that's an important thing for all of us to do, is to share some of our experiences with each other. Time now to move into a look at the news and nursing in the news this week. I'll lead off with a story I found looking at a grant of $4.1 million from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation that was given to the New York University College of Nursing. Now, they have been engaged in the study of newly licensed RNs and looking at changes in their career path. And they had a grant in place that was looking at studying these nurses for the first 4 years of their career path. However, this new grant has extended that study to go all the way out to 10 years and is going to be a real strong look at how nurses make changes and decisions regarding their career path. This is an interesting side look at the nursing shortage that has been reported time and again. Most of the other programs that are looking at nursing shortages are looking at increasing faculty for existing nursing programs, expanding existing nursing programs, and building new nursing school programs to try to increase the numbers entering the workforce. This program is looking at how nurses make decisions in the first 10 years of their new nursing career, looking specifically at newly licensed nurses, finding out why they are staying in the care environment and patient care, or why they are leaving the patient care environment. And if we can find that answer, we may be able to better approach ways to retain our experienced nurses in the patient care arena. And this has been a problem. How long do people stay on the med-surg unit working as med-surg nurses? How often do they leave and then come back? These are questions that are hopefully going to be answered by this particular study. And it's intriguing to see different ways to look at why the nursing shortage is occurring and what to do about it. I find this a novel approach, and I'm looking forward to finding other ways that this particular issue is being addressed. The next item in the news is one that's a bit shocking, but I think one that needs to be reported on and very carefully looked at. I'm unsure exactly of all the details. I'm going off the story I found here on an AP story that came out regarding an outbreak of hepatitis C that may be related to the unsafe practices and reuse of equipment between patients getting anesthesia at a Nevada endoscopy clinic. And the clinic has been shut down at this time, and state officials are now in the process of contacting 40,000 patients who received anesthesia by injection at the clinic between 2004 and January 11th of this year, urging them to be tested for hepatitis C, hepatitis B, and HIV. These patients are being contacted in reaction to the discovery and tracing of 5 cases of hepatitis C back to a same-day procedure that was done on these particular patients all at this clinic. And there may be evidence that links the reuse of certain anesthesia equipment on each of these patients. And that reuse has been deemed unsafe and outside of normal procedure and practice by the investigators from the CDC and the state of Nevada. They are being investigated as well by the Nevada State Nursing Board, and this may indeed come back to focus on not just physicians and the clinic administrators, but the nurses that staff this clinic as well. And it's a reminder to all of us to make sure that we are practicing good, safe, sterile procedure and good, safe reuse of equipment procedure when that is necessary between patients. We should be making sure that the equipment we use is prepared for the patient correctly and that we are following the safe practices that have been outlined by either our state nurse practice acts or by standard procedures that may be in place nationwide. All of this is kind of startling to me, and I have to wonder how something like this could happen in this day and age. There are places around the world where equipment is reused regularly simply because of shortages, but that should not be the case here in the United States at a well-funded clinic, and I wonder what the motives might have been in this particular situation. Again, the investigation is ongoing, and none of this has been proven definitively, although the CDC did release this report and state that there are safety problems that may be occurring at other clinics nationwide that are of concern to them. Finally, I will wrap up this newscast with a look at an obituary. And I know that might sound a bit morbid, but I found this obituary very uplifting. It's the story of a woman considered a nursing pioneer in her community, Marjorie Bennett Jensen. This woman began her nursing career at the age of 18 in 1936, beginning as a student nurse and moving forward in her career. At the risk of sounding a bit like Paul Harvey, I'll let you read the rest of her particular story over in the link in the show notes. She began many different programs in her community, became a leader in nursing. And what this story points out to me is, as we have an aging nursing workforce and more nurses retiring, as new nurses, those of us who are newly entering into the nursing career path, we need to really take notice of these women who are pioneers, and men, of course, who are pioneers in the nursing community and nursing field, and really get a sense of what their legacy is to nursing so that we can carry that legacy on appropriately. There is so much that we can learn, so much that they have seen and done, so many things and tricks and little tips and things that they have picked up on throughout their years of patient care, years involved in the healthcare system, and just the wisdom that they can bring to anyone's practice. So the next time you're getting around and seeing that there's a retirement party coming up for somebody in your facility or in your community, I urge you to take a moment, find some time, ask them out to lunch or maybe just for a cup of coffee, and learn something from these pioneers in nursing as they begin to retire more and more frequently. We have an opportunity to reclaim and reuse a lot of that knowledge if we only take a few minutes to do so. time now to move into this week's tip and trick of the week, and I thought I would look a little bit at a resource that many of you may not be aware of, and that is the National Institute on Drug Abuse website. This is a division of the NIH and can be found at NIDA.nih.gov. That's NIDA. I call it NIDA anyway. I've talked about this to some extent over in my other podcast for EMS providers, including paramedics and EMTs, because they really end up being on the front lines many times on dealing with drug abuse in the field. But many nurses also will look at dealing with drug abuse, drug addiction, and other issues because so many patients' lives are touched by this particular disease process. So I urge you to head over to the NIDA site, nida.nih.gov. There is a whole section of resources there for medical and health professionals, as well as a great deal of resources there for parents, teachers, students, young adults, and clinical trial information as well. There's also a great listing of the different drugs of abuse, from alcohol, club drugs, cocaine, heroin, inhalants, and more, all over at this particular site. I want to quote now from a quick bit of the message from the director of the NIDA to the medical health professionals, talking about design of the site and exactly what they have tried to do with this particular site. They want it to be useful to our practice and, quote, to understand that given addictions, medical, and other consequences, cardiovascular disease, stroke, cancer, HIV and AIDS, hepatitis B and C, lung disease, obesity, and mental disorders all can be affected by drug abuse. Some of these effects occur when drugs are used at high doses or after prolonged use. However, some may occur after just one use. And she goes on to talk a great deal about other aspects of drug abuse as a chronic disease process. But I think it's important for all of us to recognize some of the things that can happen as a result of drug abuse. It really affects all areas of life. And if you start looking at family dynamics and the impact on families, both spouses, children, parents, this is a wide-reaching health issue in the United States. And indeed, the world. I'll probably revisit this topic again in the future and perhaps even interview a nurse involved directly in dealing with drug abuse and drug addiction medicine. But I'd like to look today specifically at club drugs. As we enter the spring season, as prom season starts approaching, and as the kids start thinking about getting out of school, we may see more and more cases of teenagers and young adults using club drugs as they begin to get out and socialize more as the weather turns here in the Northern Hemisphere. So it's something I wanted to look at briefly. There are links to all of this in the show notes, and I urge you to head over and check a lot of these out for yourself. So what are club drugs? Well, club drugs are those drugs that are typically used by teenagers and young adults at bars, clubs, concerts, parties, other places where they are gathering. And most commonly, these club drugs are going to include the following drugs: ecstasy, MDMA, GHB, Rohypnol, ketamine, methamphetamine, and acid. They have street names that vary: XTC, X, Special K, Vitamin K, Liquid Ecstasy, Soap, Roofies. There's a whole series of listings of these. And so if you encounter a teenager talking about a drug that they took, they may not know the actual name of the drug, but they may only know the street name. This is a great resource for you to use to look those street names up. Chronic use of things like ecstasy can lead to changes in brain function. GHB abuse causes coma and seizures. High doses of ketamine causes delirium, amnesia, other mental problems. Mixed with alcohol, any of these drugs can cause serious side effects. Rohypnol can incapacitate users and cause amnesia. It's frequently used as a date rape drug. So there are problems inherent in this. According to recent surveys on drug abuse and health in the United States, more than 11 million people have tried ecstasy. 11 million have tried methamphetamines. More than 23 million have tried LSD at least once over the course of their lives. So these drugs are present in the community, and it's important for health professionals, no matter what your contact with patients might be, to be aware of resources for these medications, as well as some of the basic side effects and things to be looking for with regard to these drugs. So let's look at some of these club drugs in specific. And I'm going to look at three different groupings of these club drugs, some of the ones that I seem to encounter more frequently on the street as a paramedic in the back of an ambulance. But there is more information to be found over at the website. First of all, ecstasy. Ecstasy, MDMA, is a drug that is a synthetic psychoactive chemical that has a similar stimulant structure to methamphetamine and the hallucinogen mescaline. So it has multiple side effects on the patient, and it may be why it is being used more frequently now in the community. First of all, ecstasy has this perception among many of the teens and young adults that I've talked about this with to be relatively harmless, that it's a drug that, you know, it's okay to use because it doesn't have any lasting effects. However, there are high dose issues associated with MDMA. It can interfere with the body's ability to regulate temperature. The person can actually become extremely hyperthermic and dehydrated. It can lead to liver, kidney, and cardiovascular system failure because of the high temperature that occurs inside the body, and lead to death eventually if not treated rapidly. It can interfere with metabolism, in fact, interfere with the metabolism of itself. As it interferes with the body's metabolism, it actually causes it to break down differently in the body, causing potential harmful levels to be reached very quickly if the drug is used repeatedly over short intervals. Say someone goes out clubbing one night, comes home, goes out the very next night, there can still be enough of that drug in the system to cause compounded effects. One study looking at use of ecstasy over a four-day period and then examining long-term effects in the animals that were studied found that there was significant damage to serotonin receptors that existed 6 to 7 years after the use of the drug for that single four-day period. These young adults are using this drug as a way to heighten their emotional and sensory responses, and this may be caused by the side effects of the mescaline-like aspects coupled with the methamphetamine aspect. And so they drink a lot of fluids because of the dehydration, and so a lot of the rave parties and club atmosphere that you may find may include them giving out water for free as a way to counter the side effects of ecstasy. The other drugs I'll be looking at to wrap up this look at club drugs include GHB, also known as gamma hydroxybutyrate, used in the United States for an anabolic bodybuilding effect, but also in larger doses for its euphoric and sedative side effects. It is a central nervous system depressant that is widely available over the counter at health food stores for some time from the 1980s until 1992. However, it has been removed from the production, but is still available on the street. It comes in names like liquid ecstasy, soap, Easy Lay, Vita G, and Georgia Homeboy. It's been linked with coma and seizures following use of GHB, and when combined with other drugs like alcohol, can result in severe nausea, vomiting, and breathing difficulties, including aspiration and death from asphyxia. GHB may also produce withdrawal effects that include severe insomnia, anxiety, tremors, and sweating that can be found after they have been finished using GHB. Ketamine is an anesthetic agent that is seen most often now in the veterinary setting, although it was approved originally for both human and animal use in the early 70s. Most of it is legally sold and used in veterinary clinics. It can be injected or snorted and is known by the name Special K or Vitamin K. Ketamine causes dreamlike states and hallucinations. However, in high doses, it can cause delirium, amnesia, impaired motor function, as well as high blood pressure and ongoing problems with depression, and may cause, because of its sedative effects, potentially fatal respiratory problems. Finally, I want to take a look at the drug Rohypnol. Rohypnol is commonly used as a date rape drug. Combined with alcohol, can cause an incapacitative effect as well as anterograde amnesia, meaning that they will not remember what occurred during the effects of the medication. This amnesia is not complete, but it is complete enough that many rapists in this situation feel that it's okay to use because they won't remember what occurred. And the problem, of course, is this is a benzodiazepine, and mixed with alcohol can cause severe central nervous system depression and even death. Known on the street as Rofies, Roofies, Roach, or Rope, this particular drug is currently banned in the United States. It's illegal to import this drug, and it appeared starting in the early 90s, but it seems to have slacked off in some regions, probably because of the increased crackdown on this drug, and two other similar medications have begun to replace Rohypnol in the club drug scene, and those include clonazepam, or Clonopin, and aprazolam, or Xanax. And these drugs seem to be used in similar fashion, either as a club sedative or as a date rape drug. So these drugs may also be appearing more frequently in your communities. So that's a quick overview of some of the more common club drugs. I urge you to head over to the National Institute of Drug Abuse site at nida.nih.gov. You can find out a whole bunch of information. That is a whole section just for medical and health professionals. And it's a great resource for you to find information. If you're going to be talking in a school or to a community, you can find information there that you can target to any patient group. And it's a great way for you to stay aware and up to date on what's going on in the community. That's going to wrap up this episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank all of you for checking out the show. I remind you to head over to nursingshow.com. Check out all of the links in this episode's show notes, as well as links in all of the other episode show notes to anything else that I've talked about in past episodes. I always try to provide you good quality information and resources for you to follow up on so that you can get the best information. Because let's face it, in the 20 minutes or so that I spend with you here each week, there's only so much information I can pass along. I want to also remind you to check out and help out our sponsors either at the website. If you see something that appeals to you or is interesting, go ahead and click on the link and check out what the advertisers have to offer. It's a great way to support The Nursing Show. Of course, the best way to support The Nursing Show is to share The Nursing Show with somebody else that you know, another nurse or nursing student, nurse educator, whoever. Is a great way to help out The Nursing Show and let them know what The Nursing Show has to offer. You can reach me here at comments@nursingshow.com by email. Let me know if there's any questions, suggestions, or corrections on anything I've talked about. I'll wrap up as I always do with some great PodSafe music. Again, this week I'll be looking at music from the artist Ingrid Michaelson. This week, her song, Die Alone. I'm Jamie Davis, the PodMedic. Until next time, I want to remind you all to stay safe and stay tuned.
I woke up this morning, a funny taste in my head, spackled some butter over my whole grain bread. Something tastes different, maybe it's my tongue. Something tastes different, suddenly I'm not so young. Da-da-da.
Never thought I could love anyone.